to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hello, Where Brains Meet Beauty listeners. Welcome back. Today, I'm joined by Base Beauty's Director of Business Development, Caitlin. Hello, Caitlin.
Hi, Jodi. I'm very excited to be here with you today.
I can't wait to talk about this episode because these women at Shark Beauty are so thrilling to sit with and chat with. But since we're on the topic of hair, let's talk about our expertise at Base Beauty with hair. We have so many amazing hair brands through the years.
Yes. I know that I'm going to list a few, but I know that you have many more to talk about. We have done work actually with Shark, which is so fun to have these women on, working with a brand that, you know, we've done work a few years ago with. We've worked with Clairol, Lanza, Weidad. I know I'm missing a few, Jodi, so I'm going to let you jump in here and tell us a little bit about some of the work that we've done in hair.
Yeah, let me go back in time into my brain. You know, we've been around for 19 years. So Conair brands, oh my God, we did so much work with Conair brands through the years. With the Conair brand, we helped them launch an incubated brand at retail. We worked with, they used to own a whole ton of wet product brands like Rusk and Aquage. We worked with those brands. But yeah, devices, wet products, working with hair professionals, with a consumer influencer, PR, content. We've done ad campaigns. I mean, literally like everything in hair we've worked on. Oh, events, of course. So, oh yeah, I want to talk about Shark because this is actually really fun. Do you want to hear it?
I would love to hear it because this was before my time. So I want to hear definitely everything that we've done with them.
Okay, so I don't remember how they found us. I'm so glad they did. But this is at a time, it was before they launched beauty, when they were, you know, just masterful at, you know, blenders and vacuum cleaners, but zero beauty. So the team that was building out this whole division found us because they realized internally that while they know devices, they don't know beauty. So they hired Base Beauty to help them like form a strategic visual and messaging direction for how the brand shows up in the beauty world. And it was so interesting to work with this company and get to see how they operate from the inside out.
That's incredible. I mean, now we think of Shark, you know, as a beauty brand, right? But for Base Beauty to really have been at the center of the messaging and the visual for such an iconic brand now, that's so exciting. I did not know that.
Yeah, it was really fun because, you know, we got to talk to their product development people, their consumer insights people, their marketing teams, and we actually taught them, you know, why decisions have to go in a certain direction for beauty and why they're different for these other appliance verticals. And then we were part of the iterative process of actually getting their products ready for launch. So it's a fascinating company. And we did this not just for their first hair dryer launch, we did it for their second. We also did it for their first skincare launch. So we've gotten to ride along on this really cool journey with that company for a while.
That's awesome. That makes today's episode even more exciting. So tell us, who do we have on today's episode from Shark?
Okay, so I'm a super fan already of these two ladies. It's a behind-the-scenes look at the future, the now and the future of Shark. And we're joined by Julie Bailey Blanche. She's the global head of marketing. And Shannon McSweeney. She's the vice president of product development. And we had a fascinating conversation about innovation, consumer obsession, and what it really takes to bring breakthrough products to the market.
Yes, from Shark Beauty's wildly popular Flex Style. And I have to plug this tool right here because I'm such a fan. It really changed the way that I wear my hair every day. So I'm personally a big fangirl of it. So from the Flex Style to the development of new innovations like the Cairo Glow, Julie and Shannon really did explain how every product starts with one simple question, which is, what problem are we solving for consumers? And I just love the idea that they come back again and again to this question in their product development.
Yeah, their organization is insanely consumer-centric. And, you know, like I said, we got to have a peek into that. I'm always, always, always asking that question. Like, what is going to inspire the consumer? What do they want to see from us? What do they want to hear? So it really addresses unmet needs in a way that I don't think I've seen from a lot of other organizations. And the consumer insights driving every decision-making is fascinating. I do not think they get lost in talking to themselves at this company. They like are truly, truly focused on having a conversation with that consumer.
Yeah, it's so smart and it feels very unique for them. But we also talk about their culture of continuous improvement. So why this is amazing. I think this is such a key point for anyone who is a leader, but why they're never afraid to pivot based on consumer feedback and the whatever it takes mindset that's fueling the company's rapid growth.
So if you've ever wondered how beloved beauty tools go from an idea to your bathroom counter, or what it takes to build products that consumers genuinely love, this episode is packed with insights for you.
All right, so here we go with episode 312 with Julie Bailey Blanche and Shannon McSweeney.
I want to take a pause and thank CEW, who is our partner in this series. CEW is where beauty comes together. And I am sitting with Lisa Campione. She's the director of events at CEW, and we have a message for you.
As the beauty, health, and wellness industry's largest member community, CEW connects more than 6,000 leaders across brands, retailers, suppliers, technology, and media.
I've been a member for, I want to say 15 years, although it's 16 or 17. And I think I can see how long I've been a member on the site, right? If I go back to my page, so I'm going to look. But CEW is so impressive. Through high impact events, industry insights, and professional development, members gain access to the relationships, knowledge, and opportunities shaping the future of beauty.
Discover how CEW can accelerate your career at CEW.org and use code WBMB20 for 20% off of your first year of membership.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We're talking everything Shark Beauty with Julie Bailey Blanche, Global Head of Marketing, and Shannon McSweeney, Vice President of Product Development. This is going to be a very fun conversation because I am a super fan of the Shark Beauty products.
Love that.
And I'll tell you, like everyone who approaches you ever, about how I use them. But let's start off first with the question that's actually the most meaningful to me. This is a career journey show, and I really do believe we start to have these fantasies about like who we want to be when we grow up, when we're like 8, 9, 10, 11. So Julie, we'll start with you. You're 11 years old. What do you want to be when you grow up?
A Friendly's waitress.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Longmeadow, Massachusetts, which is near the Friendly's headquarters in West Springfield, Mass. I attended Friendly's University when I turned 16. I learned how to scoop and make my scoops precise and make sure the cone heads had matching eyes and the chocolate was dipped the appropriate way. And I actually was the Super Scooper of the Month 3 months in a row, which was a corporate record, which I'm pretty sure to this day has not been beat.
All right. So for anyone listening who doesn't know what Friendly's is, it's like a family restaurant, ice cream parlor, burger place. Very important to my youth.
Oh.
Now I'm like going down memory lane. When I was in day camp as a like tween early teen, we would have dances every like Friday night. I don't know if that's actually the day of the week it was. Every week there would be a dance. And then we'd walk to Friendly's afterwards. Like it was just what we do. And now that Friendly's, well, then it turned into a Blockbuster Video. And now it's, you know, I don't know, the doctor's office.
I feel like we've lived like parallel lives in a weird way. Because for us growing up in like fifth grade, like Friendly's was also my first date. Like we rode bikes during a half day and we went to Friendly's.
There are still some Friendly's out there, even though it's a much smaller business.
They are. It's a much smaller business. But the headquarters is still there, and they've cut, like, their bushes where it has this big logo that says Friendly's, like, in all, I don't know, plantations. And that was truly, truly what I wanted to be, which is very funny because growing up, my brother wanted to be a vacuum cleaner. So you see, like, now I'm a Shark.
And you're vacuum cleaner adjacent.
Exactly. So all dreams come true.
Shannon, you're 10 years old. What's on your mind?
I actually wanted to be the first girl to play for the Red Sox. So I'm also from Massachusetts.
That's way cooler, though, than mine.
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I think as a 10-year-old, ice cream was pretty compelling as well.
Delicious.
But yeah, I'm from Massachusetts. I grew up playing sports. I played softball. And I just, like, saw that as something that was, like, the beacon. It was, like, you know, I had older brothers. They, you know, watched the Red Sox, whatever. And that was just, like, everything.
And did you actually, like, play softball into college?
I didn't play softball in college. I played softball through high school. I ended up playing field hockey in college.
Oh. Were you a good field hockey player?
I was a decent field hockey player.
I was a lacrosse player.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So, but in my high school, like, all the field hockey girls would play lacrosse.
Very common overlap. Yeah. Yeah. It was unusual, actually, for my high school team. I was one of the only people who did field hockey and then didn't play lacrosse but played softball instead.
So I want to tell you that I'm a trailblazer because I was part of the first lacrosse team ever in my high school because I'm 50 years old. And if you go back to being 16, 15 years old, that was the start of like lacrosse, you know, in New Jersey coming to high schools.
That's amazing.
Very cool. I am a trailblazer. I didn't like think I was a trailblazer then, but like, wow, I was part of like, the first girls lacrosse team.
That's a big deal.
I love that.
So, okay, let's talk about my love for Shark and then we'll talk about you. Okay. So, I'm not somebody who ever actually like wanted to spend a lot of time on my hair. Both of your hairs look beautiful, by the way. And so I was always that like messy bun girl and I feel like I really owned it. And then I started getting older and a lot more gray hair. And when you do that messy bun with gray hair, then I'm like, oh, I look like that crazy lady in the supermarket. Like it just doesn't work anymore. So then I had to figure this out. Right. So, your flex style is the only thing that's helped me ever. So, I love it. It works so well. It gets my hair smoother, especially with all these grays are very wiry. So I can do that and add like a little bit of a smooth pomade and then I'm good to go. So you got me over this hurdle, which was like, I just didn't know what to do. And I thank you.
Thank you for saying that. I will say your hair also looks amazing. It does look amazing. I'm glad that you like flex style. I think I will say for me that kind of feedback is the thing that like keeps me in it and keeps me excited. Like I've been at Shark Ninja for over 10 years now and I used to work on the vacuum side, but coming over to beauty and hearing that type of like there's just a different level of passion and excitement and love for the products. I mean, certainly I think a lot of products we make people have that, but I've seen it to a different extent being in beauty. And it just really is like, it warms your heart so much. Like you want to help people, you want to solve problems for people. And like, there's nothing better than, I'm getting chills saying this. There's nothing better than doing that and helping somebody with their confidence.
Well, I want you to know, I really do like my blender and I like my vacuum cleaner. but I don't have the same relationship with those devices, even though they solve problems for me. Right. So, okay. Now I'll just fangirl it.
Yeah.
Like the blender, the Ninja, I don't know what it's.
The Blend Boss?
It's like, you know, it's like a cup that I can then drink later.
Yes.
It solved a real need problem for me and it made my smoothies great. And but yeah, I don't have this like emotional connection with my blender the way that I do with our, like I take this dryer everywhere and I was never somebody who would have cared. I would have just used like the hotel's little stupid dinky dryer. But now I actually like don't feel like I can go out in the world confidently without my flex styler. Wow. Do I sound like a crazy person?
No, you don't at all.
I actually think we're both very similar in that we like before I joined the hair team, I didn't own a hair dryer. I would just let it air dry, or I was the messy bun girl, like 100%. And now I feel a little bit more like, okay, I should show up with presentable hair because I, you know, work on a whole suite of hair tools. But you've, I think, said similarly.
This is true. And I actually, ironically, I have two teenage daughters who are 13 and 15, and I'm a single mom, so our house is like a sorority house. But I have learned from them, truly, like how to look your best and what's on trend and all the things. And I truly get emotional when I also talk about Shark Beauty and the FlexStyle family in particular because, and I literally was texting our global CMO last night about this. The best part of my day, I'll get a little emotional, the best part of my day is when my girls get home, they shower, they sit down with me on the couch, and they let me blow dry their hair, and they tell me about their day. Mm-hmm. And what is so powerful, I think, about what we do and how we have incredible product people that design it for the end user is FlexStyle is generational. Like, it's like I use it, my daughters use it, my mother uses it. And I just feel like that notion of having a secure, safe salon space at home is really powerful. Like, I'll tell you, to Shannon's point, like, I never went to the salon and got my hair done. Do you know why? Because I felt they would criticize me. Mm. It was a lot of like, what have you been doing to your hair? And like, we need to cut 17 inches off to get it healthy again, right? Versus when I do it at home, there is this feeling of pride and empowerment and confidence. And what I always say to the team is, we are the reason to make her feel hot in the frozen food section. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be the hottest mom at carpool pickup. And if I can get that from Shark, like, that to me is priceless. And that's why we do what we do with such passion. Revenue, yes, that always helps. The money helps. But when we brief teams, it's like, be the reason for her mm-hmm. to feel that way, you know, and embrace that. And I think that's what makes the company and the team really, really special.
Yeah, it's coming through loud yeah. and clear. Oh, you're doing good. A great job. Yeah. So let's go a little bit behind yeah. this, like a little bit backwards. So you've been at the brand, Shannon, for 10 years.
Yes.
Okay, so were you working on the first beauty products at yeah. the brand?
Yeah.
Okay, so my team at Beast Beauty worked with your team, your like consumer insights and design team on
oh
this.
My gosh.
I'll tell you offline that's all cool. the things that
yes,
we did.
Yes, I'd love to hear about that.
So this is a time when there were no beauty people in the business, yes. right? So so the CEO comes to you and says, we're going to dig into beauty and we're going to compete with the best of them. And you think what?
Game on.
Yeah, that's very true.
There's plenty true. Of problems to solve. Yeah. You know, we're all about like, go out and find the problems to solve. What are the things that people are complaining about? What are people unsatisfied with? And how do we elevate that for people? And that was like, that was and like remains to this day, the beacon. So yeah, I think I guess probably the first thought was I should probably get a hairdryer because I didn't own one at the time. But yeah, it was, I had to learn a lot about it and learn a lot more about the space than I knew. But it was super exciting because it was just this like vast open space to get into and it felt like the sky was the limit.
So what I think of the business, I guess for all the devices, not just beauty, is make it better, give it more features and make it less costly than the competitor. Is this true? Am I interpreting this correctly?
Yeah, I would say it's that or find a problem to solve. Mm-hmm. Like it might not necessarily
like
be
a category aligned.
Right. It might not necessarily be looking at what's out there and saying, how do I take that and make it better? But just like base level, what's your hair routine? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? What do you wish it could do for you? And build from there to see mm-hmm. what the right solution mm-hmm. is. Instead of pigeonholing ourselves into we're going to make one of these and we're going to add to it. Like we try to take a step back and say, let's just go white space. What do we think it needs to be?
Oh my God. I love this. I know I sound like a crazy fangirl, but that's because I am. So
that's a good thing.
We love it.
What you're saying is so interesting because we've worked with a lot of device brands and many of them, okay, we'll just make it in pink. Okay. We'll just make it in purple. Okay. We'll just make it in shimmery pink and shimmery purple. Yeah. So this level of commitment to innovation, it really doesn't happen a lot in the device category.
Yeah.
So Julie, let's go backwards a little bit. What were you doing before you took this role at Shark?
So I was 20 years on agency side. Mm-hmm. And then I pivoted and was the CMO of iRobot. So I dealt with robots, mm-hmm. Which I loved. Robots are still very near and dear to my heart. And then came over to Shark to actually run robots. And then Mark and you know, folks like told me to come on over and run beauty. And I'll tell you why I think they did it truly. Like, I had so much passion for the consumer, which I've always had, regardless of if I was the agency side and working for a brand or at iRobot working for a brand. But I think, you know, what they saw in me is the passion because like what Shannon and I were saying is we are her, mm-hmm. right? And I think when you are designing something for what you see in yourself and what you see in your bestie and what you see in your mom and what I see in my sister and what I see even honestly in my brother when he talks about bad skin or breakouts or my nephew, you know, there's something really powerful there where it feels personal. And I will say that you know, spent a lot of years in marketing working on a lot of different brands. This is the first one that has felt really, really personal. Mm-hmm. And I think on top of the fact that I love what we do and I love the humans I work with and I love the humans that I work for and the products we bring, it makes you want to work harder. And to your point, like not just aim for 5 stars, but aim for that like 5-star plus, mm-hmm. right? Because that's what I would expect. And I'm building for me. So there's something really personal about it, which I'm obsessed with.
The theme of today's program is shelf strategy, like, you know, how and why we bring products to market. So can we use the new, like the at-home facial tool? Sorry, I don't remember the name of it.
Facial Pro Glow.
Okay, Facial Pro Glow. Can we use that as an example? Sure. Like, so it launched, what, like 6 months ago?
Yep.
So when was this conceived? Like, was this 2 years ago, 5 years ago? Like,
probably 2 years ago, I would say. I think
we try to get that far ahead.
Yeah, we usually, so typically our product development process is anywhere from like 9 to 18 months. Mm-hmm. I would say most often it's in that like 12-month mark from, you know, idea through all of the development and getting it into like mass production.
That sounds very quick for something that hasn't been invented yet.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. And it is an all-out sprint.
Because we have clients that are like that amount of time for making it pink or making it purple. You know, yeah. Like, what I mean? Like just changing like something cosmetic about it.
Yes. And it usually, I guess, to be fair, yeah, there's probably a few months early on where it's like percolating and the idea is like gaining some traction internally. We're maybe tinkering with some things and getting excited about it. But once we decide like that's a thing we're going to make, there's something there. Mm-hmm. It's about 12 months. And then there's time from when we go into mass production to when it actually hits the market, mm-hmm. just in terms of, you know, getting it on shelves and things like that. But it is incredibly fast.
And your suppliers can move that quickly?
Oh, yeah. So they're with us every
Is this sort of like IP of Shark? Like you just have this network of suppliers who just know the Shark way and are like running through brick walls to get things done?
Yeah, I would say, and a lot of it comes from us. It is a very like strong symbiotic relationship. A lot of it comes from us coming up with an idea, going to them saying we want to execute this. Like how do we work on that? But yeah, I would say like we have really strong suppliers that understand how we want to develop products and what it takes to be a Shark quality product too. And it's that, you know, they just kind of get on board with it.
So is this, for this example, is it Julie going to Shannon and saying we need to do some sort of at-home facial thing? Or is it Shannon going to Julie and be like, we need to do some sort of at-home facial thing? Like, where does it start?
I think it's probably somewhere between, any product can start anywhere between the two of us. Or honestly, even we have an advanced development engineering team. And a lot of times they kind of have their finger on the pulse and they'll come to us and say, here's a bunch of ideas that I have. And they'll review them with us and we'll say, this one seems most interesting. That like, let's do this with this with that one and kind of
test them each other. Can we pause here a second?
Yes.
That team's job is just a daydream about what's possible?
Mostly, yeah. And like early stages of how might we? Mm-hmm. Basically, their job is to ask the question, how might we? Mm-hmm. And come up with maybe 10 different ways how we might do that. Mm-hmm. And then our job is to say which ones we think, you know, to an extent, it's to say which ones we think have legs. Now, at the end of the day, it always comes back to the consumer. So we might have a pulse on it and a personal take, but it's just going to come back to what the data says. And so we might say, let's try this, let's try that, or I've got a gut feel this is going to go this way. And we'll kind of help direct it. But for the most part, it comes back to what the consumer says about it.
So Julie, like the way you guys are talking about this, it's bringing up like watching movies about like people who worked at NASA. And I know it's different. Like I understand.
It's so cool right now.
I'm going to live here now.
I want my listeners to understand. Yeah. I know that you're not sending like people to space and I understand it's a different like.
Do you though?
Well, maybe not. Maybe you are sending people to space. Like I understand there's differences between putting people to Mars or whatever. And making sure that my flyaways look better.
Yeah.
But the way that you're speaking about the innovation and the passion and the daydreaming feels like that.
So, yeah, so it is. But I think it comes from a spark, right? Mm-hmm. And so the spark, I would say, really is the magic that is Shark Ninja, which, you know, Shannon keeps mentioning is the consumer, the consumer, the consumer. There's a couple different ways that I think we look at it. And we do come together as a cross-functional team of astronauts going wherever we're going. But I do think, you know, we think about it in a couple different ways. So Mark talks a lot about, like, a workaround. And a workaround is, like, if you're ever doing something in your home, like, we observe people all the time. Mm-hmm. Doing makeup, doing their hair, doing facial routines, vacuuming, cleaning, whatever. And if you start to see them like do a workaround, right? Like something that the product or whatever they're doing doesn't actually do, but you see them kind of bring a hack, like a little bit of a MacGyver hack. Mm-hmm. I'm probably dating myself big time. But anyways, we take that as inspiration and we say, okay, well, instead of them having to do a workaround, what if there was a product that did that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think when you think about the advanced development team, they're thinking about what could we or how might we? And then from us, from a marketing standpoint and a category leadership standpoint, it's what's the consumer truth that's there, right? And so when we think about hair, for example, there's lots of consumer truths that are very real. Like everyone wants no heat damage, mm-hmm. but it has to be believable. You mm-hmm. can't just say no heat damage. You have to prove to them why it's no heat damage and have the technology that backs it up. The consumer wants versatility, right? So we have to make sure we're not just creating one end style, but we've got endless end styles, right? So we think about these really strong consumer truths. We marry that with unmet needs of what's not existing in the marketplace. And I think that's truly where the spark happens. We bring that with the AD team for inspiration. Those guys probably go to the moon, come back, bring us some stuff, right? And then it is this constant like battering back and forth of like, well, what if we change this? And have we pushed it far enough? I mean, I can't tell you how many meetings we've been in where we've changed requirements at some point and completely pivoted because we said, you know what, this isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we hold ourselves and our products to a different standard, which brings back some of that pride that you see from us, because it is kind of like, these are our babies, you know, and none of them are ugly. We love all of our babies.
So Shannon gave me this year window of product development. Julie, what is your team doing while they're doing that?
So we are along for that ride with them. Everything we do, like literally the dynamic we have is we are locked at the hip. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's instilled with the entire cross-functional team. So yes, when I say like we're doing it all together, we're working through things like claims, right? How do we make this something that a consumer can wrap their head around in terms of understanding what is this actually going to do for me? I like to talk about it in terms of the what and the how. Consumers care more about the what it's getting me than they do about the how. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes Shannon will come to me and she'll say, we built this really cool thing with this blah, 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 blah technology and it does this thing and that. And I'm like, cool, but what does it actually do for my hair? And then she'll tell me and I'll say, okay, that's what I want to write a claim about, mm-hmm. right? And so we're working with claims. We're working on positioning. Like we talk about the packaging, like what can you say in a strap line on the pack, whether anyone sees that packaging or not. If we can take on the challenge of figuring a strap line, then we can take on the challenge of figuring out an out of home or a social reel or a storyline. And so we, again, like are in this together the whole way. We talk about use cases. What are all the different ways she or he can use it? How does that feed our storytelling? How does that feed our social strategy? So we're really in lockstep, quite frankly, everything from packaging designs, claims work, creative platform, social storytelling, the influencers that we choose. It's all very authentic and wrapped up in like, what's the story behind the colors? We just left a conversation today. We were talking about colors. Like, mm-hmm. what's the story behind this? What do we want them to feel? It's not just a drop, mm-hmm. you know, it's what's the identity with that then she takes on herself. So a lot. And they give it back to us too. Like product gives us a ton of feedback. I show product creative and I said, what do you think of this? We spend a lot of time on packaging together.
Yeah, we do.
There's a lot of good debate and commits, which I think is what makes the end product that much better.
So in the business that you're in and the size of business, you have so many retail partners, mm-hmm. so many shelves.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's a strategy for like, I don't know, like one retailer to have a version that's unique to them and another version. So Shannon, take me through the process of like versioning, right?
Yeah.
You have so many mm-hmm. shelves to address, yeah. and of course, every retailer is important. So
yeah.
where in the mix does this happen? Is this like during the 12 months? Is it later after something launches?
The real answer is I would say it depends, but I think a lot of it happens during that 12 months where take FlexStyle, for example, there might be different accessory configurations. Mm-hmm. It might be that certain consumers, you know, if you've got curly hair, you want a diffuser, or if you've got type 4 hair, maybe you want a wide tooth comb, or, you know, whatever it might be. And I think a lot of it comes down to making sure that the consumer has options of what they might want wherever they might be shopping. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's one part understanding from a what goes in the box standpoint, which mm-hmm. of these tools and devices need to be a part of this collection. That's one piece we need to understand and pressure test to make sure that it delivers for those hair types. And then the other piece is, you know, also understanding that the retailer knows their consumer as well. And they might know that like, well, our consumer skews more this way or prefers this color, or we see that this does really well. And so it's also getting that feedback from them to understand, what do you think is actually going to resonate with your consumer the most so that we meet her where she is or him where he is, mm-hmm. but like, so that we are showing up in the way that is most supportive and most, I guess, helps them identify with who we are and understand where we're coming from, because we're showing up understanding who they are.
And Shannon, in this journey, you get it to market. How willing are you or the team to like continue to innovate and tweak that thing, right? Like we get these phones or we get a computer and then we know like, okay, my phone's not going to be relevant in like a year. So is it the same sort of approach here where there's always better?
I think there is always better. Mm-hmm. The tricky thing is, right, figuring out when is it good enough and when are you happy with it. But I would say the reality is if you get like, we agonize over the web reviews we get. That's like the best way for us to get feedback from the consumer and maybe on social, like feedback on social and things like that.
So is there like a Slack channel between your teams where it's like, crying and talking about and celebrating the things that you read.
Absolutely. In many cases, there are daily meetings on it to just go through that and make sure that we're actually truly actioning all of the feedback we're hearing.
Okay. Can we pause there for the listeners? The level of commitment to understanding the customer is really inspiring. I think a lot of brands like talk about it, but they're not really doing it. Like, you know, somebody might read reviews eventually, but the fact that this is part of your daily process and you're taking this all very seriously is really impressive. Like, would you say that's a distinctive differentiator for you, Julie?
I would, especially having worked at other companies or with other brands in the past on the agency side. It is absolutely something like we put our money where our mouth is when it comes to that. And even prior to launches, we spend so much time in consumer testing that to your question around iteration and innovation, we've actually made massive pivots in products towards the end because we get a nugget from a consumer that like said something that catches on and we say, oh my God, we didn't think about that. Or like, what if we added a cryo pad to the cryo mask, right? Instead of just LEDs. So there's a cooling that they get. Like all those kinds of things come from our team and inspiration, but really it comes from the consumer. And I think that that is truly what sets us apart. And we're also a company where, you know, to Shannon's point, we're maniacal about the reviews. We're maniacal about customer service. We get daily reports from our customer service team saying us, these are the calls that I got. Here's the concern from the retailers. We're constantly asking, what are you hearing? Are you getting returns? Are people that happy with it? If they're not, what can we change, you know? And sometimes we just get so much inspiration from that too. It's like, okay, we're working on this thing, but then we just saw this in a review. Okay, well, let's change that in the next generation. So I think it really is this massive part of our ethos from top all the way down to bottom.
What's I'm hearing that's really interesting to me is this willingness during the innovation or product development cycle to say we were wrong and we have to make a change. And I mean, Shannon, do you have friends who work in technology companies and that are like, well, F it, we're already 8 months in. We're not going to change anything. We'll just do some, you know, like or put a Band-Aid on it. Like, have you heard stories around this?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I think it's sort of a natural tendency, right? You get like so wrapped up in, well, we've committed to this. So we just like, the momentum's taken us. We're just going to go. And that is like, couldn't be further from how we operate. We say all the time, we reserve the right to get smarter.
Yes.
That's a big part of our culture.
Wait, say that again.
Yes.
We reserve the right to get smarter.
Okay, there's our pull quote. Thank you.
So I think it's t-shirt. A great ethos to live by, which is like, you don't need to live in fear that if I learn something new today, now I have this juxtaposition of what do I do with this new information versus the decision we made yesterday. It is in our culture very acceptable to say, hey, we have this new information. This is what we thought yesterday. This is what we know today. So we need to change.
Okay. This is absolutely a culture thing, right? Because in other organizations, people would be like, well, why, let's stop on the rest. Well, why didn't you think about this a year ago? Or why didn't you do this? So Julie, like when you're thinking about like how Shark became Shark, like what is it about the leadership that came before you, right, to, I guess, establish this approach in blenders and vacuum cleaners that allows you to be this way?
For sure. I would say it's what Shannon was saying of, like, we reserve the right to be smarter. But it's also we also say a lot of times, whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. And so I think when those two things come together, right, when you say, okay, we're day X away from launch, but we just realized this, and therefore, we have to give that to the consumer because if we don't, it doesn't add value. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the true innovation. Like, and we always try to understand, like, is the juice worth the squeeze? Not for us, for them, right? Once we decide that, it then becomes whatever it takes. And I've heard that line from the day one that I started there. And I think it's this notion of permission. Whatever it takes. If you need to air freight stuff, you air freight it to get it on shelf when you need it. If you need to change course, you change course if you need it. If you need to completely shift direction, scrap a box, reprint something, remold something, it is truly this fearlessness of whatever it takes. And the second a CEO or a CMO or a VP or someone at the top gives you that permission, you feel unstoppable. But the fact that you're unstoppable in service of positively impacting people's lives is a pretty powerful thing to, right? I mean, that is what, like, some people say, oh, God, I got to go to work today. Like, I wake up in the morning and I say, we're going to make a difference today. And it sounds really cheesy, but we see it because we see it in the consumer reviews. We see it in people like you that come up and say,
I now have confidence walking to the grocery store. Thank you, Flex Style. Right? Like, it's rewarding. So, but yeah, whatever it takes. And that is like a statement.
I mean, you know this, most organizations don't operate this way, right? No, there's a lot of intimidation, fear, unwillingness to go the extra mile. We'll do that some other time, or don't tell anyone. We're just going to like push this under the rug. So let's shift gears a little bit into like sort of how you move through the world to be your best self at work. So Shannon, we can start with you. This sounds like a exciting environment, but certainly like a lot of needs. How do you like, what are your like stress relief tactics that you use when you're like not at work to kind of prepare you for this environment and the task at hand?
The biggest one is probably just like, I like to go for runs, and I think that helps just kind of clear my head. I can't focus on anything else. I can't be on a call or reading emails or anything else. Like maybe I'm, you know, listening to music or something, but I'm kind of just free with my own thoughts. I think that's the most of like a stress relief, and I feel prepared for the day when I've done that. I feel better coming into work when I've done that. But you're right, it is like there it is very high pressure, and there's a lot going on, because even though, yeah, there's a freedom to say we learned more or whatever, then we still have to execute on that. And so it ultimately can be a really challenging environment to show up for the consumer every day and make sure that we're delivering against that. But I would say running is probably the biggest one. And then, you know, I like to bake, I like to cook, but it's not as much of a stress relief. It's fun, I guess, but running is probably the biggest stress relief.
And what time are you setting your alarm most days to get that run in?
Usually 6:15.
Okay, that's not so bad. Someone,
it's not terrible. Yeah,
we had a guest earlier, and for whoever's listening, this is podcast recording 5 of 6 today, so I'm forgetting some things. But one of our guests this morning or earlier in the day said they set their alarm at 4:30.
Oh my god, I couldn't.
Every day, and that is Herculean to me. But for her, she's like, this is just my normal. Like, this makes sense to me.
That's probably you.
Well, that's me tomorrow. That's not me. And
okay, so Julie, you get the same question. You mentioned you're teaching.
I'm teaching Hot Inferno Pilates, which is mat Pilates. I teach 4 classes a week. On Thursday mornings, I teach 5:15 and 6:15 a.m. I actually do a double. So my alarm is set for 4:15 a.m. And I do it as a stress reliever in 2 different ways. There's something very therapeutic about just sweating. Sounds gross, but like you're in a room that's 104 degrees. You walk in with any kind of tension, stress, you walk out, everything has just poured out of you. And so I highly recommend anyone try it. And by the way, what I always tell my students is no one is paying attention to anything anyone else in the class is doing, because they are personally just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. So it's not an intimidating space, if that makes sense. And I also do it because I learned just for myself, when I actually add more to my plate, I handle it better. So between the kids, between work, taking on Pilates, I've run marathons, I've done other things in the past. I actually find when I'm on all cylinders, I'm more in the game versus if I have spare time, it's like, what do? You know? And so I think that for me has actually been an incredible stress reliever on the work front, but also gives me more purpose and helps me connect with more humans. Like, that's a theme with me, right? I work at Shark. We positively impact people. I joke with these guys. I say, because they're like, how do you come into the office on Thursdays? And I say, by the time I come in, I've already affected 48, 52 people's lives. And that just feels really personal. So that, and just like hanging with my kids. My kids are just cool. They're cool. Yeah.
So this idea of adding more to your plate improves the way you handle all your work. It makes me think of the saying my friend told me years ago, the less you do, the less you do, which is the other side of that, right? Like if you are not doing a lot, like it actually creates this sort of like unwillingness to do anything. And I think we as humans, we need to be productive. If we're not being productive, we don't feel good, body, but also mind. Okay, so the alarm's going off at 4:15 on Tomorrow. And then the rest of the week, what time is that alarm going off?
The rest of the week, the alarm goes off between 6 and 6:30, okay, so I would say.
Kind of normal stuff. Because one day a week, I wake up at 5:30 to get to the gym at 6, and that feels like a lot.
Oh, see? We should call each other.
When I'm in your neighborhood, maybe I'll wake up for your class.
That's amazing. Yes. Come, anytime.
Okay, one more way to inspire our listeners. Are you book readers, podcast listeners, Shannon, is there like something that's like so meaningful to you and you always like learn something new and take it with you to the work?
Interesting question. I mean, I listen to podcasts and I read books, but I feel like I do those both more as a kind of getaway, not mm-hmm. think about work, more of a an escape. But yeah, I would say, I mean, like, definitely, I think reading books is a big one. And I try to mix in every once in a while, you know, something a little bit more educational or whatnot. And maybe it's on an audiobook. I feel like I stick with it better if it's an audiobook, whereas I'll read something that's more fiction. But.
And Julie, are there shows you listen to, books you read that get you inspired for work?
I'm a massive Mel Robbins fan. And I feel like that's very cliche to say because she's like so many people listen to her. But recently I've been audiobooking The Let Them Theory. And I've actually been doing it with my mom. Mm. My dad passed away in January. She's been alone by herself or what. So it's like she used to listen to audiobooks with him. Mm. And so now she finds herself waking up in the middle of the night. She uses RD Puffy because she gets a cramp in her leg. Yeah. And she'll play a chapter and then she'll tell me I need to listen to that chapter the next day. So it's been a really... it's just been a really good bond for me, but also the message is just incredibly powerful, particularly in the environment we work in. Like, it's hard being a woman in general in business and a working mom. And so sometimes you have to walk out of meetings and just say, okay, I'm going to let them, and then I'm going to let me mm-hmm. go do this, right? But I do think it's a pretty powerful message, and she's just really, she's wonderful. So
what a nice way to bring connection for her, yeah, right? In the yeah. shared experience.
Yeah.
So now we're going to move on to the last phase of our show, which is a fun game. Ooh. So baking, Pilates, yeah. these are your hobbies. So we're putting them together in a this or that game. So this is great for anyone who believes balance means reformer Pilates, followed immediately by a croissant, right? So this makes sense, right?
That's perfect. That is balance.
So totally. I'm into the almond croissant. Makes me really happy. And I have gone broke in the past taking Pilates classes. Okay. Like in my 20s, there was a time where I like had no job, but I was spending all of my money and a lot of money on one-on-one reformer Pilates. So this was, you know, very a 20-year-old mindset around money.
I support it.
Okay, so we're going to play this. It's like lightning round style. I'll say two options, and at the same time, you'll tell us like which one you would pick. And you don't have to agree, but it's kind of fun to see if you do.
Do we say it at the exact same time?
Yeah, we're going to Natasha would tell me it doesn't have to be exactly at the same time, but you know, like,
but it's
like
a little punchy. Do the same time. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, morning Pilates or evening Pilates?
Morning.
Morning.
Grip socks, cute or necessary evil?
Yuck. Necessary evil.
Just yuck, yeah.
So you don't ask
I don't do grippies.
Okay.
Only unless I take the kids to like a bouncy house. Otherwise, there's no grippies.
Okay. So, almond croissant or chocolate croissant?
Chocolate.
Why?
Oh, I love chocolate. I do love almond, though, but you made me pick.
Chocolate-covered almond.
That's
what we invented. I mean,
solving See? Consumer problems.
Yeah, exactly.
It Just saying. Like chocolate.
Tips. Yeah.
Okay, so green juice or cold brew?
Green
cold
juice.
Cold brew.
Oh, okay. So are you, like, a coffee drinker all the time?
I do. I love coffee. I'm not like I don't need coffee. I don't need the caffeine, but I love it. So there are mornings when all of a sudden I realize it's 11 a.m. and I haven't had a coffee and I'm like, dang. But I love all things coffee.
And are you drinking coffee, Julie?
I drink coffee every day, but I do love a good green juice.
Or matcha or iced latte?
Latte. Iced latte. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So Pilates selfie, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
I'll defer to her on that.
And you'll
you
encourage
need the
your
proof.
Clients.
You need the receipts. Okay. Yes.
Sourdough obsession, yes or no?
Yes.
Banana bread or blueberry muffin?
Banana bread.
Oh, how sweet.
We're very.
Okay. Outdoor cafe or window counter seat inside?
Outdoor.
Yeah, me too. Thank you. This is such a fun conversation.
This was amazing.
Thank you so much for sharing your
wisdom and the magic behind the scenes with our listeners.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.